A badge of honor. Police officers and first responders wear badges to let their communities know they are here to protect and serve. But that's not how it feels today. And the stress of the job is taking its toll, taking lives through suicide and post-traumatic stress injury. A Badge of Honor podcast features the cast of the same name, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno. Sam, John, and the team offer the first responders workshops through their critical incident stress management teams and mental health liaisons to offer state-certified TCOL credit programs that save lives. It's time to smash through the stigma. It's time to heal from your injury, and it's time to back our blue. Welcome to a Badge of Honor podcast. Here are your hosts, Sam Horwitz and John Salerno.
Hey, welcome to a Badge of Honor, powered by the OBBM Network with John and Sam. You know, you screwed me up a little bit, Sam, because I'm usually on the other side, and now I'm on this side, so you flipped us around a little bit.
I think StreamYard just, you know, we have the tech issues these past like two shows, and now it's just like, hey, it's John and Sam or Sam and John, and poof, you just go on the screen.
It kind of just like threw me all off. I'm like, whoa, there we are. But welcome, everybody. Let's get mentally healthy together. You know, we're coming off some great Making a Difference weeks. We did a lot of good things. You know, Walk the Bridge, hashtag Walk the Bridge is growing throughout the it's growing globally. Over in the UK, they're doing an amazing job in the UK helping out with Walk the Bridge. They're doing a lot of stuff over in Montana and here in Rockwall and Fort Worth. And God bless all you guys that are really stepping up and making the effort, not the excuse, to get out there and really think about our first responders and our veterans who are battling each and every day. You know, each day is a gift. It's a gift that we are here today. You know, and our first responders don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We have to, as retired first responders, retired veterans, and supporters and family members and anybody who dials 911, we have to take that hour a day and really that hour a month and really put our sights forward and help each and every one of these guys who are out there. So God bless you. So welcome, Sam. How are you doing today?
Doing great. And hey, if people want to find out more, you can just visit the events page of our website, abadgeofhonor.org. And we've got our events up there. You can find out how to participate in Walk the Bridge. And there's some additional information where you can bring it actually to your town if we don't have one there. You know, it's Suicide Awareness Month. And I think you and I talked before the show with our guests that how important it is to really have in place strategies, policies, procedures to deal with not only the critical incidents that our police and firefighters, our EMS are experiencing, whether that be a death of a child or a mass casualty incident. So you have that critical incident debrief, but you also have peer support. You have other things so that when 2 months goes by, you know, and the person is realizing, the first responder, like, hey, why am I still suffering? Why am I still seeing these visions, smelling the smells, having these nightmares? That it's an ability to follow up, to ask the questions, hey, how are you doing? How is your sleep? And be very specific. And whether that's like a survey or you have in-person check-ins, you know, that's what our guest today has put together for the entire city of Indianapolis. And I think it is, it behooves other cities to really pay attention and realize you don't have to create these programs on your own, that you do have partners in the fight to combat suicide, to combat the stress that comes with the job. And we can all do this together and create an incredible program that really does save lives.
You know, the problem, and I think, and we've noticed this a lot, there is no standard on the policies. There's no standard on, there's no country standard or national standard, if you will, on the policies and procedures and things that we should take. Just like with law enforcement, we have to hit a certain marksmanship and standards when we fire our weapon. And, you know, with mental health being such an important part of a first responder's job, we have to hit those marks. We have to hit those national standards, because we know every first responder knows how to lie on a survey. Every first responder knows how to lie to make sure he can get through his medical thing. And that's okay. But we have to give them the tools to say, even if they're on their own, you know, you had a death of a child 3 months ago, and now you're at a barbecue and you hear a crying baby. That's a trigger. We have to let them learn their triggers and their coping mechanisms. We have to build their resiliency and their coping mechanisms to be able to fight through those and recognize those triggers. Like you said, the smells, the sights, the sounds, these are all things that impact us, and we don't even realize it half the time. We don't realize that our attitudes and our anger issues get brought up because we heard something or we smelled something or we touched something. We have to bring this fully to our first responders. And if they don't want to speak to us or their peers, they have to be able to recognize it with them themselves and start to build their own resiliency program inside them. So
let's get into the nitty gritty of programming with our guest, Brandon Dryman. He is a 22-year veteran of the Indianapolis Fire Department. And like I said, he is the wellness and support coordinator for the entire city. Brandon, welcome to a Badge of Honor podcast.
Sam, thank you. Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
You bet. Well, let's tell everybody listening and watching, you know, about you. How did you decide to want to be a firefighter, and kind of take us through what you've seen over your career up to where you are now?
Yeah. So let's see, I guess to start things off, we'd have to go back to the 1970s. That's when I first decided I wanted to be a firefighter, back in the days of Emergency with Johnny and Roy.
Wow. Yeah.
My days. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and a little bit with Code Red in the 80s, but more Emergency in the 70s. Yeah. And honestly, from that time, like as a child, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a firefighter paramedic. So going through school, high school, all that, when I turned 16, I joined our local volunteer fire department as a junior firefighter. My brother was a volunteer there. I also joined the local ambulance service, started driving ambulances when I was 16.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Which is, yeah, small town. I probably shouldn't have been doing it, right? But that's how it was. I didn't have people to do it. So I did that. Then when I turned 18, became a full junior firefighter, went to college, moved away, got my degree in business, continued to volunteer while I was in school, went to law school. I originally wanted to get a job with the Customs Service as an agent. So I went to law school, graduated from law school, was going through all that processing with Customs, and never realized I was colorblind until I had my colorblind test with Customs, and that was a disqualifying for federal law enforcement, disqualified me from that. So became a prosecutor for a couple of years down in Evansville, Indiana, and I joined the volunteer fire department there while I was a prosecutor, and thought, this, I keep coming back to this. As a child, I knew I wanted to do it. So after a couple of years as a prosecutor, I left that and joined the fire department up here in Indianapolis. I started with Washington Township on the north side of Indy, and we ended up merging. I went to paramedic school. And throughout that time, I started to drink when I was much younger in high school age, like a lot of folks, and actually middle school age. And that continued on, but not problematically. Probably when I was a prosecutor, I started to drink a lot more. And this becomes relevant to my story. Yeah. But I even noticed as a prosecutor, when I would go to the FOP to hang out with the police, I saw such tremendous amounts of drinking and terrible morale and the behaviors of the cops. And I was like, wow, you know, I never pictured myself being in that boat. But my drinking continued to get worse and worse and worse on the job. Finally, in 2012, I got pulled for a random drug and alcohol screen when I came in for my shift. I didn't think anything was going to be wrong. I actually joked on my way out that I guess I won't see you guys for a while. Ha ha ha. Turned out that the joke was on me. I actually blew positive that morning from all the alcohol I consumed the night before.
Wow.
Okay. Got suspended for a shift. I opted to go into our employee assistance program to figure out if I could get sober. Our current chief, Ernie Malone, at that time was assistant chief, and he's actually the one who suspended me. But he told me when he was suspending me that, look, you know, this is your opportunity. You get another chance at this. We had a two-strike policy. He said, if you want to get better, you can get better, and we'll support you in any way we can. And that took a terrified, addicted firefighter and gave me so much hope that I could actually recover and still come back to this job that I loved. And I can't express what that means for a leader in an agency to have that kind of support for an employee in trouble. So when I came back from that, I knew that I wasn't the only firefighter in town who had a drinking problem. So originally, after I was sober for a year, I got involved with our CISM program, and then that developed into peer support. And that's what I wanted to do, is help firefighters get sober. And it's really grown from there. I was in the companies for 16 years. The last 6 years I've been in our administration as a coordinator of wellness and firefighter wellness and support. And we started with that peer support program, but we have developed a full-time chaplain program. We have retiree support we're building. We have a family support program now for our folks at home, so they can be supported through all this. We have a sleep program, a yoga program, just a lot of different things that we're trying to pinpoint. Where are we falling down? What can we do to improve wellness? We work hand in hand with our fitness people as well, because we know that that mind-body connection, and none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. It all works together. And IMPD, our local police department, also their program is recognized by the Attorney General for the mental health program that they have on the police side. So we work together hand in hand, and it's just been tremendous to watch it grow. I teach with the International Association of Firefighters as one of their peer support instructors and a resilience instructor, travel the U.S. and Canada doing that. I'm also on their crisis response team. Primarily, I'll respond to firefighter suicides. So an agency will have a suicide, they aren't prepared for it. They can call the IFF, we'll muster a team and fly people into that location to come in, set up peer support for them, find and vet resources that they can trust, help them plan the funeral. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, everything that we've been doing in Indianapolis and kind of how I got there.
Wow, well, we're going to definitely unpackage this, because if you're just tuning in, Brandon, you threw out, I mean, these are like must-haves. And what I say is, we'll unpackage the must-haves, because if anybody's listening that works with a department of any kind, first responder, take these as like, hey, you know, we're doing it. Let me reach out to Brandon. Let me find out exactly what goes into this and see how our department can participate and take care of our folks just as well. So we got to take our first break. We will be right back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Move freely, America, without medical restrictions or penalty. Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Move freely, America, with one voice, without fear of retribution, achieving a common goal, medical freedom. We the people make our voices heard by connecting with state legislators and engaging a constitutionally compliant medical bill of rights for all citizens. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice, too. Move Freely, America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely, America. My voice.
And my voice.
And together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. MoveFreelyAmerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor with John and Sam, and our guest from Indianapolis, firefighter Brandon Dryman.
You got it. Right? You nailed it.
I got it, Dryman. During the break, I'm going, I, elongate that I, elongate that I. So, Brandon Dryman, man, in the beginning of the show, before the commercial break, you brought up so much stuff that is essential to everyday life within our first responder field, be it firefighter, law enforcement, corrections, whatever it is. And all these things have to be applied. And when you bring up the yoga and you bring up, you know, the sleep thing, those are things that are really cutting edge, but no one really knows how much proper sleep, not just going to sleep, but proper full night sleep and proper rest, nutrition, yoga, stretching, and connecting your mind and body. Because some people are like, oh, I don't need yoga. It's essential to your mental health. And you'll see over a period of probably a short time how your attitude changes, how your mental outlook on things change, how your career changes. Your mind becomes now into a connection with your body where you're not clouded and you start thinking clearly. You start looking at your job a little differently. You start looking at your family a little differently. You start embracing it more. And I think that is wonderful that you guys do that. And, you know, blessings that, you know, they're accepting that. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's been a build out. You know, I think with anything like that in any first responder community that's predominantly male, you know, things like this can be a tough sell. But we, you know, we have the support of Chief Malone. We couldn't do any of this without his support. And he's very open to us figuring out what we need to do and how can he help us make it happen. So we have just built out this yoga program. Two of us went through it in a local yoga studio, our 200-hour training. I went on and got an additional 300 hours of training.
Wow.
And we go out to the firehouses if they want us to come out so that they don't have to come to us. We go out to them where they're comfortable on their turf. And, you know, we let them know. I've been in fire and EMS for 33 years now. I'm plenty beat up. My lifestyle has not always been conducive to good health, that's for sure. So we can go out as one of them to teach the classes. We started a yoga program also at Local 416, and we have yoga classes there. We're on hiatus until October right now, but every Friday we have yoga and meditation and breath work at our union hall.
How do you pitch that? Do you like bring in a pair of like turnout yoga pants?
It's tactical stretching. It's tactical stretching, John. Come on, you got to put tactical in front of it.
That's how I would pitch it. I wouldn't be bringing in like yoga pants, going, "Come on, guys!" But you know, you know, when you pitch it, like, "Hey, listen, you start stretching." Firefighters, what is probably the most battling challenges on somebody's body? You're doing a lot of crawling. You're doing a lot of, you know, you're on your belly a lot. There is a lot of things. And as you get older, those things don't work that well. So if your muscles and everything else is properly stretched, you know, the longevity in your body is going to last a lot longer. So I'm sure guys who take yoga classes are probably a lot less likely to go on a disability. They are probably a lot less likely to have medical issues after retirement. So this is a full circle of things. Even though it's people think it's not the manly thing to do, it is really actually the best medicine for you.
Yeah, and you hit it earlier too, because as you noted, it's not just about the stretching. I mean, the stretching is wonderful and moving our bodies and knowing where we are in space. As we get older, that becomes harder and harder. If you can tune up those skills in your proprioception and know if I'm falling, that's important as we get older. But right. Even beyond that, you know, being able to stop and breathe, being able to notice how am I feeling inside right now. As you develop those skills, you, just like you said, you will see it start to show up in your life. Whenever you get in an argument with your spouse or your kid, you can stop. You can have that pause, not react, and actually have a response versus that knee-jerk reaction. You're pulling up on the scene rather than screaming into the radio to do your size up and your 360, you can take a breath. And you can be calm and deliver that information. I think you become more creative. You become a better problem solver. I like to say, whenever you meditate and practice yoga and do breath work, you don't lose your edge. You lose your edginess. And I think that's an important difference to draw out. Your edge actually gets sharpened because you become a much better communicator and decision maker as a result. And then on top of that, yeah, you get all the health benefits of being more flexible, decreased blood pressure. I mean, all the things, better sleep. It's tremendous. And we actually, when we have a recruit class going through, every Wednesday is yoga day. So we actually, you know, what do we do with our people when we want to start change? Because I'm sure it's the same with cops. Two things firefighters hate are change and the way things are. So getting in with our recruits, shifting that paradigm. Every Wednesday we do yoga. We meditate. We focus on our breath. Now, when they graduate, that's part of what they do with the fire department. So it's not a strange thing. And generationally, I think there's more acceptance anyway. But it's been much better received even than I anticipated. But we can see the benefits. And the people, they do it once and they're like, wow, that is not what I expected.
Right.
Right.
They want to come back.
It's not what we used to think, tying yourself in a pretzel and all these different positions. It truly is. I mean, we breathe.
Double dog, double triple dog.
We breathe for a living. When you can increase your oxygen to your brain, you think more clearly. Mm-hmm. When you can take in a full breath, because let's face it, between firefighting and the fighting that sometimes cops do, all of us that were at 9/11, we have things that impinge on the breathing. If you can make sure that you are doing that exercise, exercise your lungs, it is an overall wellness plan. And people think it's just mental. You're talking about mental wellness. No, it's physical too. Mm-hmm. But in the end, this is what stays healthy. So guys, if you're just tuning in, we're having a fascinating conversation with Brandon Draymond. I did it, John Dryman from Indianapolis.
Long eyes.
Dryman. He is taking us through like what you need in your department to have success as a first responder. We got to take our next break. We will be right back. Stay tuned.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now, 214-714-0495.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam, with our special guest, Brandon Dryman from the Indianapolis Fire Department. 23 years, you said?
Was it 22.
22-year veteran firefighter who's brought some phenomenal programs into the firehouse that are really helping in health and wellness. You know, Brandon, I wanted to touch on a subject that, you know, we started talking about yoga before we left, but the sleep studies that you've been trained in and that what you do with these firefighters. I know firefighters sleep a lot, unlike cops. You guys sleep all the time. So you guys are professional sleepers.
That's right.
But how much does the stress of the job, right, relate to, because I know a lot of retired guys now who are all have sleep apnea. They're all on these friggin' machines, right? But is stress, mental stress, a direct, maybe not a direct, but part of the problem with sleep apnea?
So for sleep apnea, so the way I think it can tie in, one of the things that we know, like when you work a 24-hour shift, is your cortisol levels tend to be higher than if you don't work a 24-hour shift. So for that whole time, your cortisol levels are elevated. When your cortisol levels are left unchecked, you start to crave high sugar, high fat foods, which can lead to things like insulin resistance. So then you start to put on weight because the foods that we crave and the foods that we fill our faces with at firehouses, a lot of baked goods, ice creams, things like that. And we feel like we really need them because of the effect cortisol has. So I think that indirectly, the weight that we put on, the way that our airways get affected by added weight to our neck, we get the big, thick necks and a lot of firefighters, and some of that fat tissue, you know, can go to our airways and our nasal passages and makes it harder for air to pass through. So I think in a roundabout way, it absolutely can affect the levels of sleep apnea we see. The good news is that, you know, the sleep apnea is treatable with machines. Where firefighters that I talk to sometimes stumble is they'll get that diagnosis of sleep apnea, and then rather than using their insurance and maybe paying more and working with the sleep doctor to get a really good sleep apnea CPAP, I've known firefighters who've gone onto Amazon and bought a CPAP off of Amazon and said, I'm just going to save the money and run this myself. And if you are that firefighter, I would counsel you, get with a sleep doctor, do it appropriately, where all that information gets Bluetoothed into a professional and they can tell you how to set that machine up. This is not the place to save money. Believe me.
Exactly. Sorry. It's not your health in that CPAP world is not a toy. Like, you have to have the measurements, how much air is going in. Let's expand a little bit more, because look, the fact of the matter is, the longer you're a firefighter, the more chances you are to have those really bad calls. And when it comes to sleep, you know, one of the normal stress responses is to have interrupted sleep, whether it's from a nightmare or, you know, you're having a flashback because all of a sudden you're smelling a familiar thing and it wakes you up. We know from you know, you can listen. There's a lot of great podcasts out there. Andrew Huberman is one of our go-tos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, studies, he's done a lot. Science, 8 hours. Some people are not wired for 8 hours, but it's how much sleep do you need to recover from the demands of your job? And we've got the demands from stress. We've got from mental stress. We've got the demands from physical stress, because let's face it, being a firefighter with all the turnout gear, the tanks, everything, you're putting tremendous physical stress on your joints and everything. And you can't sleep if you're in pain. So what are some of the things specifically that you've brought to the attention of, you know, the chief and the executive staff that say, hey, we need to roll this out in our fire stations?
Well, we only can heal when we sleep, whether it's right, physically or psychologically. So one of the things that we're able to get out and emphasize with our crews is the importance of, and we've heard this since we were kids, is going to bed and waking up at the same time every day, whether you're on shift or not, even if it's interrupted on shift. Firefighters have a bad habit of, I'm working a 24-hour shift. It's 10 p.m. I'm tired, but we've been busy. I know we're still going to be busy, so I'm just going to stay up for a couple of hours and watch a movie. I won't get into all the hormones and everything and how it all shakes out, but when you stay up past the point where you're tired, you run the risk of physically missing your first phase of deep sleep. And this is one of the big things we've talked about. You lose that first phase of deep sleep, you miss out on a really big human growth hormone bolus. The only time you get it in a 24-hour period is your first phase of deep sleep. The other big thing that happens there is your brain will actually clean itself. And this is including some of the amylase that's been tied to things like Alzheimer's. Washes all that down the glymphatic system and gets it out of your brain. If you consistently miss that first phase of deep sleep, it's a gonadotropin. The HGH is a gonadotropin. How many firefighters and cops are on TRT, testosterone replacement? Some of that's for vanity, but part of that is because they're not getting enough deep sleep and they miss that HGH bolus, and their testosterone levels plummet, and then they're tired all the time and they never heal. And once they get hurt, they're off forever because they can't get better. And then REM sleep is very similar. That's when we process the traumas that we face. So if you're not getting good sleep through the night, if you're not getting REM sleep, that puts you at a tremendously higher risk of PTSD. PTSD is directly linked to lack of REM sleep. So like across the board, physically and psychologically, and that's what we talked to whenever we wanted to develop the sleep program, is sleep hygiene and then the cognitive behavioral therapy for people who have insomnia, which is a structured 6-week program that we can put our people through at no charge, because I do it in my office hours, and we want people to start getting that sleep. It helps with cancer, helps with heart disease, all the things that we know are killing us year in and year out. Better sleep improves.
Now, just thinking out of the box a minute, Brandon, is, and I know this is like all about budgets. A lot of stuff is about budgets. And I'm not going to talk about the fire station I was just in a week ago. It was a brand new firehouse, right? And they were giving us a tour and they showed us the sleeping quarters. And one thing I did notice, because we're now talking about sleep, is the mattress that you're sleeping on, right? I know firefighters, they have their bunks. Are they sleeping on rollout cots? You know, or are they getting, you know, because what you're laying your head down, how you're sleeping, how your body's contorted is a direct impact on how you're going to get comfortable and sleep. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we talk, you know, I'm not talking, you know, buy $1,000 mattress for each, you know, fire station, but, you know, are the sleeping quarters adequate for our firefighters? And it kind of sounds like a joke sometimes, I think, you know, but you know what, that's probably pretty important, right?
Yeah, I can't remember what our cycle is, but we have a regular cycle. Just like we replace trucks, we replace mattresses. And we have that on a schedule for all of our firehouses so that they don't sleep on the same mattress for 10 years. And not all agencies do that. What your sleeping quarters are like is important too. I mean, I really like individual bunks for sleep. They may not be great for the social aspect of the firehouse, which is vital. But as far as sleep, individual bunks are great versus a dorm where I'm used to with 12 other people in the dorm snoring and getting up to pee at 2 a.m. and all those things that wake you up all night long.
No, they this place had individual bunks. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
They were individual bunks. But I did notice the thickness of the mattress wasn't really
a thickness. Twin bed, I think. Right? Yeah. I think it was smaller than a full.
Yeah, a lot of people have twins. Yeah. That's not uncommon to have the twin beds. Twin. Yeah, and that's not, for a lot of firefighters, that's not a good fit. So,
now you're going, because you go home, you're sprawled out on either a queen or a king, right? Maybe some of them, firefighters, maybe a lot of single guys are out there sleeping on their futon still. but now you're going from a queen or a king that you have at home, probably a decent mattress at home, to sleeping now on a subpar mattress.
Yeah, where you're already amped up and going to have trouble sleeping regardless, and then add that additional problem to the mix. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, well, we are talking all things sleep right now. Again, if you're just tuning in, these are great things that you need to consider if you run a firehouse or if you're at the admin level to roll out to all your folks, because physical and mental health is directly related. If they're not getting good sleep, your mental health will be affected. We got to take our next break. We will be right back.
Look, when you need to respond to an aggressive situation to protect yourself, your family, or your property, understanding your firearm and legal position are critical. Officers know your skills are only as good as your commitment to training. So know what you're doing, so when you're in a vulnerable situation, we can count on your response. Whether you're a beginner or a licensed gun carrier, Carry in Texas offers basic firearms training, Texas permitless carry courses, license to carry, and basic 2A courses so you can understand the responsibilities, situational awareness, and learn the technical skill required when you carry your firearm. Go to carryintexas.com to find the right course for you. Join me, former United States Secret Service agent Samantha Horwitz, on the range for beginner basics, LTC prep, and range practice. Go to carryintexas.com today. That's carryintexas.com.
Hey, welcome back to A Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam, powered by the OBBM Network. Got to throw those guys in there again because they do such a wonderful job, with our special guest, Brandon Dryman. 22-year veteran of the Indianapolis Fire Department, on their peer support and building those programs that mean so much for our first responders' mental health and longevity on the job and even after the job. We discussed about the mattresses, and we discussed about even pillows. These all come into play to make sure that they get proper rest in it. But I want to switch gears a little bit, going into some of the programs that you have put in development. And what I like, and what me and Sam have tried to do with Badge of Honor, and we work hard on it, is the family aspect. Because the families back in the 70s and 80s and even the early 90s were out of the loop on so much stuff. We were born and bred on this job to hide it away. We don't want to talk about it. You don't have to know about it. So, the family's got that secondary trauma of, holy crap, what's going on with my husband or my spouse or my wife, or whatever. Bringing the family in is, I think, key to the understanding element when our firefighters or our police officers are off duty.
It really, and so that's one of the things that from a personal level, really came home, because I had a tremendously bad alcohol problem. I never drank on duty, though, and that's how I convinced myself that I wasn't a problem drinker. If I was, I'd have to drink on duty. So that's what I convinced myself of, and there's probably people listening to this that think the same thing. My wife, however, knew beyond a doubt that I had a serious drinking problem, and she was always concerned it was going to end in catastrophe. But she didn't know who to reach out to. She didn't know what resources we had. There's no way she felt comfortable calling the chief and risking jamming me up. She didn't know what that would do to my career and my, ability to support the family. So she just kind of had to wait for me to self-destruct and hope that the best came out of that. And that's not acceptable. And we know that our families see us struggling. Beyond even that, when's the water heater going to break? Well, it's going to break when the firefighter is on shift and can't get out of there to help. So family members are left to deal with all this. I mean, they're single parents. A third of their spouse is working life. There's nobody there to help them get the kids here and there or to fix the water heater or the toilet, whatever it may be. So spouses need support, one, to help their firefighters get the help that they know they need. But the spouses and kids and family members need support for themselves. They're dealing with the same struggles of everyday life and alcohol problems and anxiety and depression, just like anybody else. And who do they trust to understand them? Other family members. It's why peer support works. So we have worked over the past year to build out a family support program. We did it in conjunction with Chief Malone on the IFD side and Local 416, because we wanted to make this program built out for everyone in the local, for all of our family members. So that's what we've done. We have two fire spouses, a spouse of a retiree and a spouse of an active duty firefighter who head up that program. And I will say the challenge of a program like this is recruiting, and being patient is really, really important. It is almost impossible for us to get information into a home. I mean, it's somewhat of a miracle if we can get people to check their emails. So actually, just like you said, John, it's been taboo that we don't walk this through the door of our home. That's a separate bucket. We don't talk about what we do at home. So getting information about programs like this can be tough. I will tell people, if you want to start it, start it. You can reach out to me. I'll talk to you and connect you with our people who run our program. But be patient, because it does take a while for that word to filter out, but it will happen. You just need a couple of people who want to be involved and who know how to operate social media to start spreading that word. And once one spouse or parent hears about it, they'll talk to another spouse or parent, and it will start to filter through the system, but it takes a while. But it's worth that effort to get it in place. It really does help.
Yeah, you look at programs like Al-Anon, right? Al-Anon. And if you were a heavy drinker, right? Al-Anon is a place where it's peer support for alcoholics.
Yeah.
For those family members, right? So group settings, like with first responders, spouses who meet and they discuss and they can talk about, hey, shows that they're not alone. Hey, has such and such been drinking a lot? Has he been doing this a lot? Has she been doing this a lot? And they're like, yeah, well, and then you can start putting all these things and maybe find a root cause, because maybe it's something in the firehouse. Maybe it's a chief. You have a very a phenomenal chief, but maybe a chief or a lieutenant that's, you know, everybody's complaining about and bringing more stress into the household. So when you families bring a lot of information to the table, and like you said, but it is hard getting them all together. It's like corralling, you know, if you put free food out, I'm sure but it is hard to corral, but it's very, very important. It is probably the lifeline to many of our first responders.
Yeah. And it's often when we have someone who, say, is a candidate to go away for treatment for 30 days, 45 days, 60 days, whatever that may look like, having spousal support is kind of the key element, because I'm not going to leave my wife or my husband to tend to all that. At least that's our excuse, even though we're probably not much use at the home anyway at that point. But we tell ourselves, I can't go away, I'm too valuable. Having that spouse in on what's going on, able to talk to us about it, knowing that it's going to be confidential, and say, look, your wife, your husband wants you to do this too. And peer support, the other beauty of how this all works is, if you're going to have trouble getting your grass mowed or getting your kids where they need to be, peer support will help your spouse figure that out. That's what we're here for. We will get people to mow your grass. That's where I think peer support really broadened what we can do. We're not just waiting for bad calls to come in and respond out to the firehouses. We do that, but it's so much more encompassing that. What are your needs? What are your barriers? And how can we help you and your family remove those barriers? That's our goal. And that's what we do. And that's what a family program also allows you to do. It gives you those inroads into the home that we've just never really had before.
Well, that's fantastic to know that the spouse will and the family has that support. And that, again, these are all things that we think about. Well, of course, if, you know, my friend has to get treatment, I'll jump in. It's not when you think that would happen, rather than having a structure to help it happen. I think that's the key part. And also having your chief be like, hey, your job is secure when you get back. A bunch of months ago, we had it, you know, here in Texas at a very well-known department, he assistant chief, everybody knew he was, he went to get treatment. He came back. There were still things that he had to work on. He had the doc's input, and the department let him go. It's a crime, because what you're telling your folks is their job is never secure. And that's never good for the department in terms of retention. And it's also not good for the community, because it's like, wow, can we really rely on our firefighters? Guys, if you're just tuning in, we are listening to Brandon Dryman. He is the wellness and support coordinator for the Indianapolis Fire Department. He is laying out what you need in your department. We got to take a quick break. We will be right back.
To the Health Engineer Show, I'm Kirk Buechler, the health engineer right here on the Offbeat.
Hi, I'm Larry Cortez.
Hi, my name is Susan Hamilton, and you're watching Offbeat. Hi, this is Doreen Milano. Welcome to Big Ideas Small Business, where we will possibly bury our dollar.
Hey, welcome back. That was a quick, short break. Hey, welcome back to a Badge of Honor podcast with John and Sam and Brandon Dryman with Indianapolis PD. We're talking about family support. And, you know, older firefighters, older first responders, we're talking from the 70s, 80s, 90s. You know, the new generation right now is probably a little better. They're probably a little bit more open to a lot of these programs. And we discussed this just before we went on air, Brandon. You know, I went to FDIC back in the late 80s and early 90s, and it was all about building construction. It was all about, you know, confined space and two in, two out rules all started coming into play back in then. And that was great, you know. But there was, I don't think there was critical incident, but that was about it. There was no mental health programs. FDIC has embraced the mental health community, correct? And they're really bringing these programs to light, which I think is an amazing thing.
Yeah, when one of Chief Bobby Halton, rest in peace, he died recently, but he is a real champion of mental health. He had some family experience with mental health, and I think that really brought how real those struggles can be to his front door. And he had, in the last probably 5 years, really made mental health a priority. So you basically at any time at FDIC, whatever session you're in, you can find a mental health session going on at FDIC for that whole week. There are vendors there from all different treatment facilities now that you can go and meet with. There's worldwide peer support that's led by Skip Ackerman, who's a retired Anderson, Indiana firefighter. They're there. It's like there's so much now to support our people and so many different pathways for education. And we can see it even growing in the treatment of firefighters, you know, that more and more facilities are trying to specialize in first responders and our particular needs. But yeah, FDIC has grown, and really a lot of other conferences have too. FDIC is dear to my heart because it's in Indianapolis, and you know, it's the largest fire department conference in the world. But it's really remarkable how much that's grown. And the IFF has also played a big role in that as well with their peer support initiatives and mental health programming, and the Center of Excellence out in Maryland is a, you know, first responder treatment facility. There's just so much that's grown, and it seems like it's happened overnight. I know working in it, it hasn't. It's been a ton of work for everybody to put in to get us here. Going back even generations, the IFF program started about 30 years ago, and it's finally come to fruition. So it takes a long time to take root, but then when it happens, man, it is just hit and everybody's getting on board, which is great. It's interesting too. You had mentioned some of the, you know, the older firefighters, they have turned out to be some of our best, I don't want to say salespeople, that probably sounds wrong, but our best champions to say, you know, after they retire. And I think sometimes that's what it takes to get out of the business so you can speak more freely and you don't have to be as worried about it, but to say, pay attention, y'all, because I wish this is something we had in place 20 or 30 years ago when I started my struggles and had my second divorce and got my arrest for DUI, and they just kept putting me to bed. I wish we would have had these things in place. And that's what I hear time and time again. So I have so much hope for recovery and for people intervening earlier and earlier upstream. The idea of we're really good at pulling people out of the river now. We're at the point, how do we keep them from falling in? I think that's really where we are.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. And what are your thoughts on having a national standard, knowing that we've got departments, because we talked about that with law enforcement, and even, you know, we've got large departments to really small departments, and budget does, it's, you got to talk about money, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what, just, you know, what's your opinion of having a national standard for fire, at least?
I mean, I like the idea of it. It makes sense so that, you know, wherever you go, this is what we can expect. It's maybe on the fire side. And I know some law enforcement, you have reserve deputies and things like that. The split between career fire service and volunteer fire service is a tough one. You mentioned budgets, you know, volunteer fire services just don't have, generally speaking, the kind of money that career agencies do to get trainings in. I know on the career side with the union, the IFF is trying to create that national standard and set up more regional teams. So, and in Indiana, our career teams will certainly assist volunteer teams as well. If they need that help, we don't turn our back on anybody. But I do like the idea of a national standard so that we can all train together and know, you know, because we respond across the country if somebody needs it. And we've done that so that people can know what they're getting and we know what to expect when we get there. I think there's some value in that.
Even if you start off with a minimal standard, you know, it doesn't have to be this whole blown out policy nationwide, but a minimal standard, because, you know, when you look at it and you talk about budgets and we talk about volunteers, because I was part of a volunteer organization for about 23 years over on Long Island. But you know what? When the 2.2 Scott packs went out of play and we had to go to, we had to go to the 4.5s, mm-hmm. the slimmer ones, you know, or our gear changed. We had to get rid of our leather helmets to get our, you know, now non-haz plastic helmets. You know, the money comes, you know, because they know they need it. Right. Yeah. We know we need to put, you know, no one's wearing a leather helmet anymore. Right. Because it holds the toxins. No, you know, now it's a standard that everybody has to wash their gear. So these are standards to keep our firefighters protected internally from hazards on the job. We can make those budgets work for workshops, because workshops, they'll fit. They can curtail any workshop to fit into any department budget, you know. Yeah. By sponsorships, by donations, by anything. So that's how that's got to be sold. We always, like OSHA upgrades things. We have to mentally upgrade things and put that on the board. It's just as important as gear and fire trucks.
Well, and there are some national standards out there dealing with this, which is nice. So we have the Wellness Fitness Initiative. It's an IAFF, International Association of Fire Chiefs collaborative. You can find it online. If you just search Wellness Fitness Initiative, it will lay out what you need for a behavioral health program. NFPA 1500 lays out what a department needs from their employee assistance program all the way through their behavioral health assistance program, not just for firefighters, but also for their family members. So that's laid out. NFPA 1582. Deals with our annual mental health screenings that you have to check for major depressive disorder, PTSD, current suicidality, and substance use disorders, and how those tests need to be administered. So we do have those out there, particularly for career departments, that they're expected to adhere to. And maybe it's piecemeal that they're able to do that. Maybe they can't do that all at once. But like you said, John, like, what's the least we can do? And let's start there and we can build, right. But we have to do something. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Brandon, how can people reach out to you so that if they're listening and they know it's like, hey, we either need to start a peer support or one of these standards, I need to become more familiar with to kind of bring it up the chain to make sure we're doing the right thing for our folks.
Yeah, they can email me. My email is B@yahoo.com. I'm also on Instagram, just one word, Brandon Dryman on there. And then on Facebook, Brandon.Dryman, send me a message, hit me up. I'm happy, you know, happy to help however I can.
And you're on LinkedIn as well.
Yes. Yes, I am. Yep. I'm also on LinkedIn. So yeah, hit me up on any of those platforms.
That is fantastic. You know, we thank you. Like I told you in the beginning, this time was going to fly by.
Yeah.
But you have John has the fire in his background. I don't. And I just want to say how impressed I am at not only the city of Indianapolis, but beyond that of IAFF and what they're doing to set those minimum national standards and make sure that firefighters are not falling through the cracks. And when I hear that, and then we experience what we did in Texas not too long ago, you just got to sit back and go, none of this had to happen.
Yeah.
You know,
big kudos to you, Chief.
Yeah.
Big kudos to you, Chief.
It's amazing. Chief. Yeah.
You know, because that's where it all starts. It trickles down, and your local politicians who are on board, who are going to cut this budget and approve the budgets for the city for this. So as long as you have that backing, it all starts up here.
Yeah.
You know, and then trickles down. God bless you that you have such a supportive hierarchy.
Thank you for providing a platform to talk about it. That makes a difference too.
So folks, you know, thank you so much, Brandon, for coming on. Folks, reach out to Brandon on his social media. And, you know, let's get this going because this is an important conversation. Yeah. Brandon, we'll definitely be in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. This is huge. This is huge. You know, if you are realizing by listening to this that your department is glaringly deficient in everything, because we connected the physical and the psychological, the mental, and why they need to go together, and the programs that are out there already through the organizations that Brandon named. And there's a bunch, and all you have to do is search them on the internet, and you have to watch the replay to get all of those, because I can't rattle them off. But this was important. You know, Carry the Load, you see the banner behind me each week. They are instrumental in taking care of our first responders and what they do. We're part of their continuum of care, and we're proud to be partners with them in that mental health fight for our first responders. Check them out at carrytheload.org for more. So thank you, CTL. Hey, you know what is coming up? North Texas Giving Day. It used to be like this one day extravaganza. Early giving has already opened. Okay. So what does that mean? That means go on to a badgeofhonor.org. You'll find a way to give. You can go across our social media and look for the North Texas Giving Day, our link right there. You can click on it. You can give now or on Thursday, September 21st. That is the designated North Texas Giving Day. We these are moms, these are dads, these are sons and daughters, aunts and uncles. They care for our communities. They care for us. Let's give back to them. So when you give to a Badge of Honor, it goes right back to the first responders. So they get scholarshiped into the workshops that we talked about here on the podcast tonight. Some of what Brandon's talking about, going into the firehouses, going into the PDs, and helping them understand what it means to be resilient, being mentally well and physically well. Check out our events page on our website. I'm just going to put it up here since I keep talking about it. You can find out where we're going to be. We got a lot of stuff coming up. And again, if you're in a department, you want to bring us in to do an 8-hour workshop, hit us up through the website. We can schedule that. No problem. Connect with us on the social media. Thank you to everybody who tunes in each week. We are growing our platform on Rumble. We got Rumble, a Badge of Honor TV on Rumble. We are on the gram. Connect with us over there. On Twitter, it's a little bit different. A Badge of Honor 1, because some soccer star has a Badge of Honor. Soccer star. We can't reach you because you're doing soccer stuff. but we're a Badge of Honor one. But hey, if you just get on the internet and look up a Badge of Honor or a Badge of Honor podcast, you will find us. Please connect with us because we want to connect with you. We want to hear what you guys are doing in your departments. How, you know, if you've got a story to share, definitely reach out. We'll get you on the podcast. You're not an island. We're not an island. We can heal together. So for all the first responders, you know, we are praying for you every day. Our feet hit the floor. You have our prayers. Thank you for keeping our community safe. For all of our veterans, thank you for answering the call, doing what you did to provide a platform for freedom so we get to do this each week. To our active duty personnel across the world, thank you for keeping our shores safe. John, take us home.
Man, it's just this was an amazing show with Brandon. If he can get the point across that sometimes it takes more than one resource to really build your resiliency. So look into the yoga, the sleep. Everything ties together for perfect mental health. And, you know, sometimes it's our own laziness, it's our own stubbornness that keeps us away from that. And then it's too late and we already fall down a rabbit hole. It's never too late. Start tomorrow. Make it a challenge within yourself. We're all that way. And get mentally healthy for before 2024. That's it.
Amen to that. See you next week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
A Badge of Honor podcast is produced for the OBBM Network podcast and protected under copyright law. For content permissions, please submit your request to abadgeofhonor.com on the content page. For OBBM Network programming information, please call 214-714-0495 today.